I started taking Hormone Harmony because when it's that time of the month, I truly do not feel like myself. Starting about a week and a half before, I get the wildest cravings, bloating, exhaustion like no other, and now it's easier than ever to manage PMS and menopause because of Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony supports hormonal balance and regulation, which for me is a biggie. It relieves symptoms of menopause, supports cortisol, estrogen, and progesterone levels, and improves sleep quality. Alexis and John's engagement is keeping me up at night, so thank goodness for Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use code AndysGirls for 15% off today. Much like Jennifer Aiden on her last appearance on Watch What Happens Live, and I do mean last, when it comes to summer, I need to keep hydrated, and that's why I love Fiji water. Jen's thirst might not ever be quenched, but with Fiji water, mine always is. Fiji water is Earth's finest water. Unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature soft, smooth taste. And that's why Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S. And P.S., Fiji water has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH. Get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick up some today. Alexis Bellino, imagine how much better her season could have gone if she had just simply quenched that thirst. And my recommendation? It's not just water, it's Fiji water. I'll kill you with kindness, but if you mess with me, play dead.
My initials might be BS, but I'm not taking any.
Ooh, that was short and sweet. I'm very into it. That was very good. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 583-ish, 584, somewhere along there. And I am so excited for the journey that I know this conversation will take. So welcome back to AG Chief Housewives Correspondent at Entertainment Tonight. Dare I say, Diane Sawyer energy. Like, I was trying to think of, like, who does actually, honestly, probably a better example is maybe Anderson Cooper. Anderson Cooper energy. Because I was thinking in my head, I was rewatching your interviews, guest role introduced in literally 2 seconds. And I was thinking to myself, like, who gives their guests the opportunity to, you know, take this time for good for them or great for us. Welcome back to AG Bryce Sander. Bryce, how are we?
Oh, I'm great, especially after that intro. I'll take any comparison to journalism icons, as long as they are of that category. There are some that I would rebuff being compared to.
Yes, I don't know that we're, there are some maybe View alums that we probably wouldn't want to be compared to so much.
Well, that gets into, is that a journalist territory?
Right. And I genuinely was running an errand just before we started recording and was rewatching some of your interviews on ET's YouTube. And I was thinking to myself, like, who would I compare Bryce to? But the problem with some of these celebrity journalists is the focus genuinely becomes on said journalist as a celebrity and not on the actual construct of their interview style. So I actually think Anderson Cooper is a good example, because even though he is obviously a superstar and name in his own right, he does give people the space to really, really dig in. And I feel like he's a genuine active listener. So I think it's an apt comparison.
Oh, high praise. I will take it.
Well, I mean, listen, speaking of praise, I watched your Tamra interview twice, Alexis Bellino twice, Shan I already had. And frankly, even without watching it, I sort of knew her reactions by heart because we just see each other on such a high level. But Alexis and John Bellino obviously are newly engaged. We're recording
John
this on
Jansen,
Friday.
Unless he's leaking her name.
Did I just call him John Bellino? Oh my God. Well, am I wrong though? Am I wrong? Alexis and Johnny J have gotten engaged. What was your reaction to that announcement and the timing of it?
I thought the timing was interesting, because Alexis was not really on the show this week. And so to me, I was like, that's a little like, do we want a little attention this week? Because we're not getting it on television. But I'm not shocked that we've gotten to this place in that relationship by how it's moved over the course of the last year. A year ago at this time, I believe she was still engaged to the previous fiance or was like breaking up with him around this time. I think it was September 2023. So a lot can happen in 1 year.
Yeah, the way that she communicated in your interview that she's kind of never felt like this before. I mean, putting aside Jim Bellino Jansen, however you want to reference him, but also her ex, I would kind of think to myself, huh, because she was engaged to her ex-fiance for 3 years. It was a 3-year engagement. She has every right to feel like a new and different kind of love, but it is fascinating how strongly she seems to hold affection for Johnny J. It's a passionate affair.
It's very passionate. I think what was interesting when I talked to her is she owned that she and Jim Bellino had no chemistry. There was like no butterflies, sparkles, whatever, however you want to categorize it in that relationship, which was always a point of conversation during her original run on the show of like, this, what is this couple? Because it seems like a marriage of convenience, not one of romance, which maybe it was. We only got a window into the fiance that she was with on, they did the Below Deck trip. And I think they did a season of Marriage Boot Camp over on WE TV. So I don't have like full insight into how that relationship worked, but I do think her mom dying, like a bunch of dominoes falling into place, leading her to that booth at The Quiet Woman where Johnny J was ready for a photo op. I do think a lot of maybe life perspective has changed for her in this last year, and maybe that's why she's gone full force into this of like kind of the life is short mentality. Love is here, I'm gonna grab it. But I have a lot, I'm interested to see where all this leads to at reunion. That to me is like, we're dropping this bomb, what, like probably a month before they film reunion, this engagement bomb. So people are gonna be riled up to talk about it there.
How do you think that will affect her behavior at the reunion, if at all?
I think we'll just get more of loved up Lexi, you know, like it's going to be more bubbly, my man kind of talk. I wish there are like a few questions I wish I had asked her if I had more time. I wish I had asked her, you are watching John say these things about a woman he spent so many years with, was so intimately involved with, loved. How do you know he will not do this to you in a year, 2 years, 3 years time? And how can you, like, what are we missing as viewers about John that you're going to stand by him when the outside perspective makes it look like he's simply attacking a woman who's already hit rock bottom?
Excellent questions. And I would add to that, whose responsibility is it if the audience does not like this man? And how do you decipher Shannon's responsibility. If you look at John and Alexis's perspective, it's on Shan. According to Tamara at the tail end of this week's episode, which was a 15 out of 10, might I add. But at the tail end of that episode, Tamara says they want you to clear your name. My questions would be, what can Shannon do? What are you asking her to literally do to clear her name? What is that process? And also, what happens if it's unsuccessful? Why would Shannon have to bear the responsibility? Why can't John grow up, grow a pair, and be a man and be able to contain either public animus or figure out a way not to exist in that space?
It's so interesting because it's like the mind F of we're on a TV show together. It's our real lives, but we're also, but there's also the like people are watching our lives. And so I think it's like within the confines of the TV show, yes, you would need Shannon to be the counterpoint to your argument. But in reality, it's the audience is the counterpoint to your argument. What was interesting in talking to Alexis, and again, had I had more time, I would have pushed her on this, is I asked her, what is the biggest lie Shannon has told about John? Like, just give me one. She wouldn't name a single lie. She just said everything. And Shannon has owned, it's like, it was a relationship of ups and downs, good and bad. But I've never lied about my experience in that relationship of footing the bill for a lot of what we did. That seems to be at the kind of crux of all of this, is the money issue, obviously. So I wish she had just given me one example of what's a lie you feel like Shannon is perpetuating about John. Because I don't think Shannon said anything that bad about John. Like, it's she paid for everything and he would ghost her when they would have the fights that emotionally ruined her, or however she put it, the season before. Those are the only kind of points I can think of she's made against John Jansen, who Alexa says does not like being called Johnny J, despite continuing to call him Johnny J.
She also did that with her ex-fiance. His name was Andy, but she renamed him Drew because his full name is Andrew and everyone in his life called him Andy. So she said, you're now Drew. And he was like, okay, copy that. So she does have a thing with nicknames. Yeah, it's very strange that she cannot, or maybe completely understandable that she cannot name a single thing. And yet that is their greatest argument. Their greatest argument for us seeking revenge and trying to publicly humiliate you is if you don't tell the honest truth about our relation, about your relationship, LOL that I'm using R, about your relationship with John, we're going to release these videos. But let's walk down that path. If they released videos, wouldn't the videos show that aside from the specifics, big aside, that their relationship was toxic? How is that different from what Shannon is saying? The thing that I genuinely do not understand, and I have spent so long thinking about this, which is tragic in its own special way. The thing I don't understand is, why would you contest a woman saying this was not her man? Why would you contest a woman saying our relationship is bad? She's not denying responsibility for the DUI. She has not stopped drinking, but that's not even the argument they're making. That's a separate, strange kind of narrative that Tamara is doing. If she said, I never drank, and I didn't get into a DUI, if she said our relationship was perfect, then while I still have serious issues with this man saving footage to release as a master, you know, teaser trailer or whatever the fuck else of dysfunction, I would still have that issue. But it would make sense that they were saying, you're saying something about our relationship not being great. Well, here's proof that it was bad, but she's not doing that. So how do we connect those dots of if Shannon doesn't say her relationship was great and John is a great guy, we're going to continue to publicly shame her. Aren't you supporting what she's saying, which is that John is not a great guy, he's toxic, and this is what a toxic guy would do?
I mean, that's, you've put it beautifully. It's like a no-win game, you know, like there's no good that can come out of this either way. And either way, it's not going to redeem him in whatever way Alexis is trying to redeem him. A question I also posed to Alexis was, what could be more damaging than somebody three times the legal limit flooring a car into a house and getting arrested for it. Like, this to me already feels like this woman has been pushed to the ground and is getting back up. Why do you want to dig a hole to toss her into? It doesn't make any sense. She shouldn't be anybody to you. You claim she's not anybody to you, and yet you're so defensive of John, but nothing she's saying is that egregious.
It's like neither of these people have ever been on TV before, but this man willingly signed up by dating Shannon and participating, allowing cameras to be in his house and hers. He participated in being on reality TV. The oddity here is that I remember Shannon's interview. It was either the day, it must have been, I think, the day or 2 days after the announcement first came out that she and John had broken up. She was on Jeff Lewis Live. She cried. It was very emotional. But the episodes that followed, she was still protecting John. She didn't want to say anything negative. And Jeff actually also said, I'm not going to say anything negative because I feel like you guys are going to get back together. And guess what happened? They got back together. They weren't boyfriend, girlfriend in name, but they behaved that way regardless up until after Shannon, the point of the DUI.
Shannon has actually said they were fully back together, boyfriend and girlfriend, and were lying, like not lying about it, but not confirming that outside of their own bubble.
100%, which you can tell on those interviews. Like, everybody is talking around the fact she didn't want to say, like, we're fucking, but like, it was very apparent that they were still seeing each other and spending time together, even though they didn't want it to be a name. So at that point, she was still defending him. So I'm confused as to whether he's upset she wasn't successful enough, or he's upset that viewers have an opinion, or he's upset because his version of winning, which is completely disordered and fucked, isn't happening. Like, let's say that his version is like a zero-sum game, you're winning or you're not. How do you think he's grading himself at this point? Or is it only Shannon's grade?
What's tough about this is we're not hearing, outside of the Carlos King interview, from John. So we're getting everything via Alexis, which is through like her lens of it. And so I think it's hard to ascribe a grade to him because I don't know what he's doing. I only know what Alexis is doing, you know?
Yeah.
So will they try and wheel them out at reunion and we get to hear from him? I don't know.
Yeah, it's also interesting, you know, in your interview with Alexis, you know, she goes, you mentioned the fact that, you know, word on the street is he offered her whatever amount of money she was going to be paid not to film. And her response is, no, this is the first time that I've ever said this. But it's actually not that he offered my salary. He offered me twice what I would have been paid in order not to film. And I just kind of think to myself, what would have happened if she had said yes? What would have happened if she had said, I'll take that check. I want to live my life privately. How do we think that John would have responded? What evidence do we have right now that suggests that this man does not want to be discussed? It's not that. He wants to be discussed. He just wants to be seen as entirely positive. You've gone into the wrong industry, sir.
He's an enigma.
Wrapped in a riddle and Shannon Bedore's cash.
Yeah, and $75,000 of facelift money. I feel like it's like we have the facts and everyone's reading them differently. You know, like the two sides are reading them so differently. And so it's very difficult. I don't know. I don't even know what point I'm trying to make. It's just like, what? Because I pushed her on. So that's you not taking his money means you're not in this for the money. And she's like, no, I am, essentially, is what she said. So it's like, and she kept repeating that it would have been so much easier not to go back on the show. But it's like, but then why did you ultimately? Were you just scared that this opportunity finally came back your way, finally boomeranged back? And if you don't take it now, it's never going to come back. Like, what's the psychological deep dive there of how you ultimately landed on this, other than a psychic telling you to do it, which was kind of her answer of how she ultimately said yes? I don't know. And I think both Alexis and Tamara went into this season thinking, well, the audience is obviously going to side with how we're approaching things when the audience has like probably 90%, is safe to say, been fully on Shannon's side. And I think Gina rallying around Shannon has only helped that, because it's like, here's the one person who really has no skin in this game or has the most actual animus to throw back at Shannon based on how Shannon treated her. And she's saying, hey, guys, stop.
Yeah, great point. And Alexis makes a point of saying, I didn't want to be perceived as a kept woman because that's what the audience thought of me the first time I was on Housewives. So I wanted to go back to show that I'm an independent person and I stand on my own. And I'm just thinking to myself, why on earth do you think our perception has changed? The audience actually wanted to see that. That's one of the reasons why I think many of us were excited for Alexis to come back, because we thought she was at a different point in her life. And she's just not doing a great job of proving her point, which is that now she's independent. All I see is now she's not currently married, but the kept woman ideal continues.
Yeah, I was excited to see this Alexis 2.0, and I wanted to see conversations between her and Heather about raising trans kids. And like, there's so much interesting stuff there. And it would also be very interesting to hear Alexis open up about the end of her marriage to Jim and the path she's walked since, and to hear more about, like, she was her mom's caretaker in her final days in hospice. Like, there's story there that maybe was explored and we're missing it in the episodes because she is only a friend of, that maybe they would only service if she was holding an orange. But I do think this, like, saying you don't care about Shannon, you don't want to be friends with Shannon, but always talking about her, which I know we're getting cherry-picked conversations on air. I'm sure Alexis is talking about other things and maybe some of those things I mentioned. But you have to have the foresight going into being on camera of knowing, oh, if I talk about Shannon, they're definitely going to use this.
Yeah, it's almost like the person who might be her advisor in some of this does not know what he is doing. Because if you look at Shannon's perspective on, I really kind of fucked up, which her cast members agree with her about, that he was telling me that I needed to cover for things and I was as defensive as I could possibly be and people thought I was lying. And her cast members are like, yeah, that's exactly what we thought. We thought you were lying and were hiding things and weren't being real. So we were mad. Like, to see that continue with the God help me, quote unquote, next generation is tough. Because Alexis is just doing a less successful job than maybe Shannon did. Both of them did a not great one because it's not a great assignment to begin with. For someone to put that much pressure on you to not focus on your life, the show is about their lives, but instead trying to do a PR campaign for their partner, it's an impossible. You cannot succeed at that on Housewives if there is something to cover up. The reverse is the person is on the show long enough to reveal themselves, like Shane Simpson, who came on the show. We didn't necessarily love him. And as the years went on, we saw a different perspective of him. We understood maybe some of his discomfort with filming and also the way that he and Emily weren't communicating with each other effectively. We have seen as their bond has deepened and also just the ability of having more time to understand him, that he's actually a really interesting and I think like genuinely lovable guy who is being supportive of Emily. And John does not get that. It's not about showing more of him. It's about covering what we have seen. What does that tell you about his character?
I think, you know, two things can be true at the same time. Alexis's experience with John can be the truth, and Shannon's experience with John can be the truth. Alexis has made the point that the relationships are very different. So we need, on that note, respect that Shannon is saying this was her experience in the relationship. No one is 100% great all the time. People have good and bad days, good and bad experiences. So I can fully own that. Who Alexis is saying John is now? Sure, that's who John is now. Who Shannon is saying was a year ago and for the 3 years before that, that's who John is. Like, these are the same person. And so I think it's like, you need to let those two halves be the whole instead of trying to convince us one half is the whole.
absolutely entirely agree. And the reality is that Alexis and John don't necessarily understand that perspective, but that doesn't mean that we cannot, you know, it's something that I think is important for people to potentially understand. And Alexis and John might have a very healthy, happy, wonderful relationship. It's so unfortunate that they've chosen not to show that to us. Like, I'm not seeing a happy relationship. I'm not even seeing a relationship. I'm seeing a defensive PR campaign or offensive PR campaign. So maybe in future seasons, God forbid, we see more of their relationship and something that we may or may not enjoy, but at least have the opportunity to discuss. We don't get any of that. But again, because she's a friend of, she is constrained by a lot of this. We don't know what she was filming, let alone what she was living at this point in time. Like, that's an absolutely valid point.
Right. And what I'm very interested to see, we got that mid-season tease where John shows up to what I can only assume is the finale party. And I really want to know how that conversation came to be, from being so against filming to like finally showing up. We see Shannon seemingly have quite the reaction to having to be in the same room as him. Like, it's a no-win game for Alexis and John, because even if they play every card right in the viewer's eyes, it's still going to always come across as setting Shannon up or attacking Shannon or doing something to take a dig at Shannon. I did ask Alexis, I don't think it made the final cut of the interview, but can you at least, you keep saying Shannon is talking a lot about John and keeps bringing him up. Can you at least respect the fact that you're both doing press, you're both doing the show now, you're going to be asked about it, and it's not like she's going out there on a soapbox shouting about this man. She is responding to questions people have about the man. And she did say, I fully understand that, I respect that, and I trust that I understand the kind of confines we're both in, the setup we both have. So that was big of Alexis, at least to acknowledge that while she has previously said, stop talking about John, she is acknowledging that Shannon is not doing it because she wants to do it. She's doing it because it's part of her job.
Yeah, I don't think that made the cut.
It didn't. I know.
I don't think it made the cut.
It was a very long interview, and you know, there's time constraints and trying to get everything out the door in a way that is timely and makes sense. But that was a cutting room floor piece of sound that I thought was actually very good.
I wish it had. It would have reflected well on Alexis, and she could use that right now. And also, it would be more interesting for us, just selfishly. There's something that's like not interesting about seeing the same emotion expressed again without the ability to have a genuine conversation, especially because she does not have specifics to supply. So how much more interesting would that have been if we saw nuance? Like, that to me would have been a moment. I'm deeply unsurprised that he shows up at the finale. I think a man who craves privacy would not be sending news of his engagement as an exclusive statement to a media outlet. I think, you know, Mr. Privacy might want that moment to be covered, maybe because they put it on an Instagram post if they want to be public about it, not because he's looking for a specific kind of attention. But what do I know?
Well, in Alexis and John's defense, I will say her Instagram post and the People story went up at the exact same time with the exact same copy. So it's like they gave people a heads up that it was coming. It wasn't like, we're going to let it live there and blast it out. I also, like, Alexis is the one with representation. John is not. So it may have fully been her call and choice. But who knows? I also think it's a hard thing of how do you navigate it. It's going to be an ordeal either way.
Yeah, but he also put out statements before Alexis through the same media outlet.
Yes, which is how Shannon apparently found out she was being sued for the facelift, which is, that to me is wild, that you find out through People Magazine, Paige DeSorbo, I know how People Magazine works, that you're being sued.
Yeah, Mr. Privacy.
My life right now is so busy. I mean, have you been watching Orange County this season? If I was a Shan stan before, imagine what my day is like now. It does not leave a lot of time to, God forbid, make a meal from scratch. That's why I am so thankful for Cook Unity. Cook Unity helps with a variety of restaurant quality food from award-winning chefs delivered to your door straight to the office, all at a fraction of the cost and time you're spending now. Indian food brings me so much joy. It's one of my favorite things to eat. So thank goodness for Cook Unity because I was able to enjoy chana masala thanks to Chef Lena. My favorite legume, as many of you know, is a beloved chickpea, so there is no better dish. Indian spices, chickpeas, sautéed cabbage and kale, coconut basmati rice, and even a vegan yogurt with fresh herbs. There's no cleanup or meal planning. Browse the menu by protein, chef, cuisine, or dietary need. You're sure to find food you'll love. Take a load off and let Cook Unity handle dinner. Affordable food crafted by award-winning chefs delivered to your door. Go to cookunity.com/andyscrolls or enter code andyscrolls before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code andyscrolls or going to cookunity.com/andyscrolls. Ever feel like you're too busy watching a beloved Bravo marathon to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution, like spicy chicken tinga tacos with black beans and pico de gallo, which I got to make and enjoy this week. I was able to swap in a vegan substitute for the chicken and had one of those dishes I will remember. Unlike Padmalakshmi, I am not a top chef. Sunbasket is so easy. It comes with super easy to follow directions. And if I can do it and love doing it in the people's kitchen, so can you. Sunbasket makes it easy and convenient to cook healthy, delicious meals at home. Try it for 4 weeks and see how your clean eating can change the way you feel. And Sunbasket can fit my lifestyle and many more, including Mediterranean, carb conscious, vegetarian, keto-friendly, gluten-free, diabetes-friendly, and more. And as I did, it's super easy to customize recipes to meet your exact needs. I don't feel constricted by looking at vegan or vegetarian only. Sunbasket makes it possible to eat your best your way. You can swap red meat for chicken or turkey, or like me, swap in a vegan protein. Plus, Sunbasket offers pre-made meals, delicious single-serving meals that are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes, which is just around a commercial break from RHOC. There's something for every health journey, mine included, and every busy lifestyle. It's easy to use Sunbasket to achieve your kind of healthy. Go to sunbasket.com/andyscrolls today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/andyscrolls to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build your own perfect clothes with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. I am so thankful to Armoire because I was in a genuine pickle last weekend. I was rushing to New Jersey, shout out NJ, the Garden State, not hunting for new housewives, but going to a friend's baby shower, and I had literally nothing to wear. So thank goodness for Armoire. I opened my bag from Armoire, grabbed this beautiful, bright lime green Sachin and Bobby midi dress, and it fit like a glove, and it saved me all of that extra stress. There are so many benefits to Armoire. You always have something new to wear without the hassle and closet clutter. It's sustainable. You no longer have to feel bad about only wearing an outfit once, and Armoire is women-founded and women-led. Right now, AGs can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/andyscrolls. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/andyscrolls to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. I do want to shift gears a little bit because there was a lot to unpack on the episode. There were two people that I focused on in just terms of like connectiveness and nuance in the ep. The first I have to say was Emily, because the way that she was communicating to her hubs and then to Jen about how she was triggered by feeling like Jen was being taken care of. And then I think Emily is thinking, not only did I not have that, but it's reminiscent of the way that my mom sort of treated life itself, that everything was someone else's problem. And Emily, as the minor child, was expected to handle the burden of whatever happened in her household. And there's a lot that we are obviously not being told. I really, really appreciated hearing that. And I think it's not a matter of a person saying I was wrong if they were critical of Emily's behavior in that previous scene with Jen where she's like yelling at her about the Rolex. It's not about being right or wrong. It's about the opportunity that this show can give us of getting more into the nitty-gritty here. Maybe she would have done that on her own, but the cameras, the storyline, the shape of the show gives her the opportunity to really, really get into this stuff instead of writing it off. It's like an opportunity for the audience, but also the cast in a way that I thought was really meaningful.
I have always believed that Emily and Gina are good housewives, and I'm glad the audience is finally catching up. But yeah, Emily's being very opinionated, but in a way that doesn't come off as like what a performative. It's like, I'm sharing the truth of my experience to shine light on the truth of your experience. I do think there's a nugget of this that's like that Jen could have thrown back into Emily's face of like, but you and Shane are supported by Shane's parents.
But it wasn't about her current financial situation. That's what Jen was saying. Emily was like, this has nothing to do with how much money I have or what I'm maybe or maybe not being given as an adult. It's like the childhood trauma of it all sets you up with so many emotional scars that it doesn't matter. It's like why you look at celebrities with all the fame and wealth and whatever, and many of them, when they crash and burn, are talking about the things that happened as a kid. It's like money does not buy you happiness. This is the greatest example of that.
I guess to my point is, I think for Jen, it seems that appearances are very important. You know, like the optics of a situation seem more important to her than the truth of it. And I guess that's Emily's point too, of like, you, let's just be honest here together and like own up that this is why it was triggering to me. But I also think you need to explore this a little bit. That's the way I interpreted that conversation, is like Emily was sharing what triggered her, but as a way to like open a door for Jen to walk through of like, go look in that room and see what's happening in there. And then come back out and I can help you navigate it. Does that make sense? Or am I speaking gibberish?
No, it does. But I also think the situations are so entirely different because Emily is not in a position where there's a question of how her money is being spent or any question of like financial that she's being irresponsible with her lifestyle or livelihood. Emily has supported herself. She was a working attorney at some point. Shane has been working for a number of years. He did not have his law license. He does now. He's now past the bar. If his parents are supporting them in some way, it's as an addition, not instead. Yeah. These are people who would not be in a position where, God forbid, something happens to them financially, that they would be in search of someone. They have the ability and do provide for themselves. I don't know what Shane's parents, who obviously are very wealthy, what they are or are not contributing. But that to me is not a comparison to Jen's situation. This is actually what I'm saying, I think, is Emily's argument.
That was okay. You've put it into new perspective for me, because that is a good way to kind of drop it into buckets of Emily and Shane can be independent. They just have the luxury of whatever. Right. Jen is not independent in any way, shape, or form. And it's been enlightening to watch. But I also have appreciated her candor and addressing it of like, it is embarrassing to be in your mid-40s and not know how money works. But it's also tough to watch because it's like, how are you in your mid-40s and you don't know how money works?
Yeah, and poor, poor sweet Jen, when we get to later on in the season, I don't know if Ryan is going to be like, I know how money works, I just don't know how the law works, and now I'm finding out. So maybe you put two of these people together, you don't even make a whole person, because I don't think Jen knows how the law works either. They've just decided that this was God's plan for Ryan to be a bookie or something. I don't know.
I'm interested to see what details come out about that as we watch it, because I mean, it's like truly when I read those stories, I'm like, this is a foreign language to me. But it seems like he's very much an accessory to the crime and not the one who committed the crime. And he's the one working with authorities. So maybe in some world, he did not know he was breaking the law or didn't know anything illegal was happening. But it's also her inability to explain what he does for a living is also concerning.
Yeah, I mean, she said, I think at one point, maybe as a joke, that he was retired. So it seems like baby boy got himself a part-time gig. I mean, we're going to get more information. I'm not infantilizing her. Jen's journey. Maybe she's wallowing in it. She's at a crisis point in I think her life. I hope that she's genuinely aware of that. And the fact that regardless of how she has treated the first several decades of her life, she can decide to change at any time. She can change the circumstances. She can change her reaction to them if she decides to take control. There's going to be a counter effect. She's going to have to likely really, really transition into a different lifestyle, but she can take control of her life at any time. She has the opportunity. She's lucky that she seems healthy. She's lucky that she's now essentially niche, but a celebrity. There are more options available to her than had she not joined Housewives. Let's see what she does with them.
Well, I think she can probably credit Housewives with essentially saving her from whatever path she was going down, because a lot of this coming to light probably wouldn't have happened without Housewives. And she now has an income of her own from the show. So it's like, thank you for sharing your mess, because it's ultimately going to hopefully be a reward for you.
Yeah. And the other moment that I found just personally really meaningful was Katie talking about the impact of her divorce on her family, including the kids that she shares with her ex-husband. And to hear of what has happened with the estrangement between her oldest daughter and her daughter's biological father, does not like the term dad used because she finds it triggering. But to hear that through the course of their, you know, because divorces can change people's relationships, but they can also reveal the worst aspects. I just have to say, I'm not a child of divorce. I don't have kids. But to hear of a parent receiving a text message from your child that's saying, you know, you don't allow my siblings to see our dying grandma, regardless of whether or not that's true, you're selfish, whatever. To hear that that parent won't take it, like, just take it. Your kid is expressing upset. To put yourself seemingly at the same level where we're just two human beings who get in a fight, so I get to walk away, is you're proving your child's point about a level of selfishness. It's astounding to me that this man is so self-involved. From what we have heard, this is new information, but if I'm going off of what I've heard in this episode, I am astounded by that being the decision, regardless of his relationship with his ex-wife, to decide the child should be punished for expressing upset and that you never follow up or show any consideration or care for any life event that this kid has had since is repugnant to me.
Well, and it's like there's this... I might be reading into something here. Again, we don't know any but the full story, but it's like this relationship he has seems to only be with the daughter, not the two sons, which is like a whole other very strange component. But I think it's interesting that one of the sons lives with him and he refused to sign off on the child filming for Housewives so we can see her full family. So I don't know, it's complicated and it's strange, but I'm enjoying, maybe not the right word. This is a storyline we haven't really heard before of a new father figure entering the picture and really stepping up to the plate and the child deciding to honor that man by taking his last name. Like, this is all, I think, a great story and probably relatable to a large swath of the population that has gone through being a child of divorce and having new parents enter. I've actually gone in a TikTok rabbit hole before of like, there's people who do like, you know, where you can have like 100 photos and swipe. And it's like, my dad never took me to baseball games, but my mom's wife took me today. Like, my dad didn't come to my graduation, but my mom's wife did. And it's like, that's kind of this story, but in the Housewives version that I think is very heartstring pulling.
Yeah, I felt like that was really the theme of this episode, was talking about abandonment and child abandonment and how that can affect someone who's a young adult, as Katie's daughter is, and how it can affect an adult, Emily, who is triggered by the idea of abandonment and the idea of not being given the kind of opportunities as a kid that Jen has had as an adult. I just thought it was really, really nuanced. And then you add on to it the fact that we're doing like a traitors themed thing, which was so fucking funny. And I, again, watched the episode twice, but I just like the side views, everyone's responses, finding out that Dubrow was a traitor. I was very confused by the game. I like didn't understand the instructions the first time I watched it, but I loved it.
Games made any sense, especially when they were like pulling stuff out of that box. It's like, no one explained what's happening here. And I'll take any, I know she's a very divisive person, but I have enjoyed Teddy's post Beverly Hills transition into like full-time Vicki Gunvalson troll. And so any excuse we have to see those two women not interact, but be together is funny to me because, you know, like Vicki has a few modes. She's like annoyed, she's horny, she's depressed, or she's like
workaholic
or woohooing. So it's like somewhere on that scale, and Teddy just brings out that annoyed bit of her that brings so much comedy. I do want to know if the push into the pool was staged, because Tamara gripped onto her nose as soon as she went into the pool, which if you were actually caught off guard by a pool push, I don't know if you would have the forethought in those 3 seconds to grab your nose, especially as inebriated as she appeared to be.
1,000. I'm so glad you said that, because I had forgotten, but I absolutely thought the same thing when she held her nose. And I'm not saying she didn't experience anguish as a result. She looked super fucking uncomfortable, but absolutely do I think. And it's also Teddy. So everything she does has to be prepped. Like, Teddy is someone who, when it comes to being in the public eye, she needs a dress rehearsal. So the idea that she and Tamara discussed something, 1,000% do I think that's possible. Absolutely it was. And also, I was in the audience, you might have been there too, for that Watch What Happens at BravoCon where they did the Jan 6 cancer stuff, and it landed like, I'm glad they showed that clip on the episode, because Andy's face was like, I don't like this at all.
It was a lead balloon.
It was a lead balloon. We were booing so loudly. And then I think we're cheering Vicky's name during the commercial break. And then allegedly Teddy was backstage crying, because she's someone who wants to be seen as a smartass, but she can't
take on the role. She's just too sensitive for it. So to watch her walk on stage at Watch What Happens and be like, oh, I've got some snide comments in my back pocket, but you're not able to really compete is fascinating. Because like Vicky, she won't agree and probably cannot hear booing if it happens because she's just in her own universe. But she will double down. I think the Teddy stuff is fascinating because it is a little bit of Teddy Housewives cosplay that makes me giggle. It does make me giggle.
I think this is a great way for us to experience Teddy. We don't need to see the whole time, but having her pop in little like shit stirring occasions is kind of fun.
I honestly totally agree. And it's thanks to Teddy, God forbid, Teddy Joe Carrot. It's thanks to Teddy Joe Carrot that we got that moment of Heather Dubrow under the like jacket with Vicky, which we finally got to see in an episode. We've seen it in the trailer and it's no less delightful of like, oh, that's so rude of what she said. Yeah, she's like a fucking bitch. Like, I'm sorry. The line delivery of all of that is perfect. Like the entire setup is perfect. The only thing that doesn't make sense that contributes to the chaos is Tamra saying, you know, essentially Teddy's here because she reminds me of Alan Cumming. Like that is such a huge disservice to his holiness. I think one of the best game show hosts, what Alan Cumming does on Traitors is like immediate EGOT, one of the best performances, right? Because he is doing a performance, because he is such a lauded actor. So aside from that, because I was like, okay, we're going on a limb here of why Teddy Joe is here, but like you're really taking it to a different level.
That line felt to me of like a producer asking her, set up why Teddy was the person to host. You know, like you can't just pull out of her ass. She's my version of Alan Cumming. It's like she was set up to say that, but it's like it was any excuse for Teddy to wear an equestrian themed ensemble, you know?
Why was she dressed as an equestrian? That was the closest she had to Scottish.
She's a horse girl.
What does that have to do with being Scotland?
Because that's the wardrobe she had in her closet,
right? That was the other thing. I like,
she's not buying anything new to do this unpaid gig.
That's all she has. I would think she would be spending an untold number of dollars and cents to look the part. That would be the thing that would not surprise me, is her coming in some ridiculous outfit. I really felt like this episode was a reset. Like there was just something about it. And, you know, the Katie decision, speaking of things that aren't necessarily scripted, but Katie's decision to take on Heather, I think was a difficult one because it's sort of one-sided, obviously strategic, and you kind of talk around it when it comes to the cast discussing all of this.
Get those nails out of my face.
I was like, oh shit, she's doubling down. So this episode was interesting because she definitely had snide remarks about Heather, but I just kind of watched her in the episode and I thought to myself, you know what? She's so confident in a way that I really like I might not like some of her decisions, but you can't say she doesn't fit in. I think she fits in with the cast, and that's so fucking hard to do on Orange County. She's doing a really tough thing. So do I think the Heather argument is gonna flop because who fucking cares about whether or not she lied about a paparazzi photo? Yeah, like that's probably not gonna work out for Katie, but there's other stuff that I genuinely think is.
I hope we leave the paparazzi talk at the fake Traitor's Mansion and don't revisit it from here until reunion. Like, I hope it doesn't continue to be some point of contention between Katie and Heather. Let's fight about something else. You don't like each other on a different level for some reason. Let's dig into that. But you know, I think Katie's actually been a very good addition. I think she got probably some bad advice from somebody about how to enter the group, and pulled an Anna Marie esophagus moment with the paparazzi pictures, because a text message from a random person we don't know saying yes is not proof. Show me a text message of Heather and or Terry Dubrow texting somebody to say, hey, we're at Disneyland and we'd like our photo taken. Then I will believe that this was set up. My guess is, despite what everyone is claiming, there are always paparazzi at Disneyland. There are always paparazzi pictures of people at Disneyland. I forget where I saw this. Maybe it was a Reddit rabbit hole or something of somebody claiming to be a paparazzi agent of like, there are a lot of amateur photographers who hang out at Disneyland, like go there and then they take photos and know how to sell them to these agencies. that then give them to the media. The paparazzi business is a lot more complicated than people think it is. It's not like people are always like, TMZ got photos. It's like, no, some agency obtained photos from a freelancer who sold them to them, and then they offer them to TMZ, who purchased them for a lot of money. Like, it's, there's not like, outlets are not sending out their own photographers for stuff. But I would venture to guess that's what happened there with Heather. And they noticed they were being photographed, so they started doing goofy poses. If I had to read that situation, I highly doubt she called someone up and said, pay the $250 admission to come into Disneyland to take my photo.
I totally agree. And I also think Katie is in a difficult spot because she's essentially saying, yeah, I talked to Susan Paparazzi, the person that knows everything that there is to know, even though we don't know their name. And you're giving us a weird screenshot with no proof. You're just getting, so just to confirm this thing that I think, yes, like that's not, I don't, that does not give me anything. That just tells me you have someone in your phone that you texted and they said, yes, you're not actually giving me anything. That is not technically a receipt. It is just simply, sweetie, a screenshot. So she's going to be digging herself out of a hole. Like the reunion is, when it comes to this, it's going to be tough for Katie, unless she has something else, which we don't care about.
Yeah, it's going to be very tough. And that's why I hope we get more of the Katie and her daughter stuff, and Katie bonding with, she's like gotten very close to Jen in the second half of the season, unless this stuff.
There are so many moments that make up a year. The big moments and milestones, birthdays, anniversaries, when Shan came to the Clawfest. And then there are the small moments, the slow morning spent making a decadent breakfast, running to a grocery store to get 9 lemons to put in a bowl. All of these moments come together to create our year and in the end, create our life. Artifact Uprising wants to help you preserve your meaningful moments this holiday season. Whether you want to say, I love you with the perfect gift, display favorite memories in your home, or connect with loved ones throughout the year, BCC Shan, they have a product you can personalize. Artifact Uprising is a Colorado-based company that creates premium quality, customizable photo goods for your digital photos. I just ordered a few photo books with Artifact Uprising, a hardcover travel photo book in this gorge shade of Pacific blue, which is perfect for the credenza in my living room, devoted to my first ever trip to Paris, and a photo book in midnight blue, one for myself and for my family. Moments from my childhood, my parents spending time together, it is going to be the perfect gift for Tobes and Chard. This is something incredibly special that will keep us connected. Artifact Uprising makes it easy to tell your story. Through the end of the year, AGs can give Artifact Uprising a try and get 20% off for new customers or 15% off if you've purchased before. Just visit artifactuprising.com and use code AndysGirls through December 31.
There are so many fall rituals I'm so excited to get back into, like seeing which $50,000 ring Lisa Barlow is going to lose next. And of course, there's one ritual that deserves to be added back to your fall priorities in addition to Salt Lake: daily hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier and Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do, minus getting Monica back to the cast. I focus every day on making sure I have enough electrolytes. When I wake up and before I go to sleep at night, I am making sure that my electrolytes are on the up and up so that I can stay there too. And also at the end of the night, when I'm looking for a little SG Kiki, I add Liquid IV to seltzer and I have a little bit of a seltzer spritz. For me, faster hydration is not just about workouts. It's about ensuring that my quality of life is good. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. That's 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. With 8 essential vitamins and nutrients, it's always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall ritual with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Andy at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code Andy at liquidiv.com. You know whose skin I envy? My dear best friend, J-Lo's. I have been a J-Lo superfan since day one. Every docuseries, every movie, I am all in. And I have had the pleasure of meeting Jennifer Lopez. And let me tell you what, she is a glow. And now I'm thinking about the wedding planner. So Chris Manzo, we have a movie we need to rent. And yes, we need to talk about J-Lo's beauty regimen, the goddess of glow herself. She's just shared her secret five S's to ageless skin. Serum, sunscreen, supplements, sleep, and sano. In Spanish, vivir sano means live a healthy, sane life. It's the foundation of her new J-Lo beauty line. P.S. Did I pronounce Spanish better or worse than Vicky Gumbelson at Ondelez? Get that J-Lo glow for yourself with J-Lo Beauty's deluxe kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. It gives your skin a smoother, visibly brighter look, improves the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles, and protects against UVAs and UVBs. My personal favorite is that blockbuster hydrating cream. I am obsessed with a cream that does not make my skin feel oily, which is why I'm obsessed with J-Lo's. I get that kind of dewy glow. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try J-Lo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that J-Lo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/andyscrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for AGs. Head to jlobeauty.com/andyscrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. jlobeauty.com/andyscrolls.
Speaking of hopes, how are we feeling about Tamra Judge these days? And what is your hope for her through the rest of the season and also potentially the reunion?
You know, I believe Tamra is the architect of my Modern Housewives. The women were not getting into each other's personal business and fighting and having these emotional moments until she joined the show. I think she's a necessary worker in these conditions. I think her, it's like message and delivery aren't aligning. I truly think she wants the best for Shannon. I think her approach to trying to prove that to Shannon is not landing. And I think at this point she knows it's not landing. There's anybody who's ever dealt with anybody who has some sort of substance abuse issue or dependence issue, you cannot force them to do anything. So it's like, shouting at them to go to rehab is never going to be the thing to get them to do whatever you think is best for them. You just have to walk the path with them. And when they ask for advice, guidance, help, you help direct them, but you can't be the one to force it. And so maybe that's a lesson Tamra has learned through this experience. I do think it's really sad that this is kind of the end of their relationship. It seems they're both like very adamant this is the end. Though we've heard this before, it could all circle back. I did think it was really sweet that like Trace Amiga's rebonding at the Traitor's Mansion. Mm. Like, remember that reunion where Vicky was ousted from Shannon and Tamra and they all came together for the triangle hug? They recreated that. So like the energy's still there. I'm hoping Vicky pops up at reunion because I want her to react to Tamra's claims that privately, she holds the same thoughts about Shannon that Tamra does, but just doesn't tell Shannon because Shannon has said she doesn't believe that to be true. I want to, you know, hear Vicky. I want that moment at the reunion, but I don't know if Vicky will show up there because I don't think they're paying her.
Do you think that's what would stop Vicky? And that's not a criticism, but like if they were like, come to the reunion, they're not even going to give her a day rate. They would just be like,
I mean, they'd probably give her something. She's probably getting paid something because she is doing interviews, but I think it's nowhere near what she was, you know, making when it was season 15 or whatever.
I mean, I'd like to see her back. I know it might be a hot take and I just said it out loud without thinking. I like her as a friend of.
Yeah. I wish she would accept that that's where she needs to live Like there, because Vicky, your personal life has not evolved or changed all that much since the last time we were with you full time. I think she works best when she's in the mix, but not at the head, like not the main ingredient. At this point, she was the main ingredient for many, many years. No one can take that away from her. But I do think she adds something to the show, and she feels a little lighter coming in when the burden of being an orange holder isn't upon her. Because, you know, she's got insurance to sell. She has other priorities, things to give her time to.
The fact that she's like finally filming in the car with Shannon and she's not even listening to her because she's sending a business email was such classic Victoria. And I do want her back, but I do think the role is friend. I really think she's a good friend, and you can't find great friends easily. You know, it's what they've seen in their friendships and also in their casting.
I mean, I think the last 2 years, you know, Taylor Armstrong and now Alexis, it's like that friend role is hard. Because you only get to share so much of your story. And so we know all of Vicky's story already. We don't need to deep dive into much stuff. Come back, play with us. And then when you don't have to be, go be at Kodo Insurance. Or battling a number of medical mysteries. Like, Vicky, please take care of yourself.
Yeah, she just put up a podcast with friend of the pod, Christian Gray Snow, about she had had sepsis or like full body, just was in she had a critical health emergency. So
yeah, coming out of previously sharing on this season, the whole staph infection pus moment.
Mm-mm. We can't
like
go
Vicky,
back.
Your body is telling you, slow down.
Yeah, she needs to really and truly slow down. I don't want to speed up at all, but I'm just kind of thinking to the future. What do you think is going to happen with Alexis on the show? Do you think she'll be back as a friend? Do you think there will be the possibility of her being full time? What do you think is going to be offered? What do you think she wants?
I would imagine she would like to be full time. I'm sure. I think anybody would want to be full time, better pay, you know, at the base level, and then also just more, you get to be more part of the conversation. I would hope they would bring her back once more, just because I think one season is very hard to like fully understand who somebody is, even though we know her. She's a 2.0. I think they're gonna want to follow wedding planning and that wedding and all of that. It's giving Camille Grammer in Hawaii. You know, she was a friend of, but we went to her wedding and did all that. I think reunion will be telling, though, of like, where can she and Shannon exist together in this friend group? Like, because Shannon seems to be of the mind of like, I can be in the same room with you. I want nothing to do with you. Alexis says that, but yet she continues to carry a conversation about Shannon. So it's like, if she can drop that and they can independently operate within this circle, then I think it will work. But if they're, I don't want to watch this season again. That's always my like annoyance with Housewives fights, being unwilling to drop. It's what's like caused Jersey's, you know, derailment at Rails. We need to move on. We need to actually like do what Teresa and Melissa did, but respect it and be like, we are not interacting, talking about each other. Nothing's going to push us to that point. So if that can all happen in a perfect world, then I think she should come back, because I think this cast as is works. I also like having the same cast for a few years, because otherwise it's like, oh, I'm watching a new show again. I'm watching a new show again. I'm watching a new show again. Instead of, the reason people fell in love with these shows is you were spending, you know, at first 3 years, then 5 years, now upwards of a decade with some of these, you know, for lack of a better term, characters. And the more world building you can do by keeping those characters, I think the better the shows are for it. Until when the show becomes the people's lives, then there's no life to show on the show. And then the show has to change, which is what happened in New York. You know, all of those women, their entire life became about being a Real Housewife and filming the show and doing the show. So all we were watching was, you know, a very highly produced show. There wasn't a whole lot of personal story happening and they were really only hanging out because they are cast members versus these women seem to actually spend time together off camera quite frequently.
That's a great point. And with Tamra, I mean, you called her the referred to her as sort of the modern architect of Housewives. I feel like this season she's just building with rotten wood. How do you think she's going to be able? Do you think she has genuine capacity to change some of her behavior here? Because for me, it's she's the one that keeps referencing the reason I'm behaving poorly is because I was mistreated as a friend and because I believe Shannon is lying. But the use of shame and humiliation is entirely on her. And she's not listening to Gina or anyone else who's saying this is not what you were doing is not good. I don't know. Is she the personality that's going to dig in more and continue this? Or how do you think this is going to go?
It's one of two ways. Either she continues just digging till we hit who knows. Or I do think, I mean, she's lasted a really long time in this universe. I think she does pay attention to where the audience is lying, the outside conversation. And maybe that's like the opinion she appreciates more than the women she's filming the show with. But I truly think she is a necessary part of making this show work, because if you didn't have Tamra, then we watched it. Emily stepped into that role the two seasons Tamra wasn't on it, and it was hard work for Emily. And I don't think it did Emily much service to the audience in being that instigator. So having the kind of the known instigator, mm-hmm. I think from an audience perspective, is a helpful thing, because it's like, we know this person is going to spin and stir. It's the Lisa Rinna component, right? It's like you know you have this cast member who's going to make sure these conversations happen. And you need that on these shows as much as people shout into Elon Musk's internet that they want them off the show. We have seen how that works. You take these people out, the shows are worse off for it.
But also be wary of Lisa Rinna. You don't want to instigate yourself into a position where you're spiraling and you're so tightly set on your perspective that the only voice you're willing to listen to is your own. Like, Tamra's skirting a lot of that this season, and I just don't know. She's such a smart person, but you can't argue she's oblivious.
I think what Tamra is running up against is she is having conversations with these women without Shannon in the room, where they are echo chambering her. They are yes-anding her about her opinions on Shannon. When they all get in a room with Shannon, those women don't speak up or say the opposite of what they're saying to Tamra. So I think that's kind of what's happened here, is she thought she had the backing of this group behind her. We're all under the same impression that Shannon has a drinking problem. We need to address it and we need to get help for her. But these women, when Tamra goes from 0 to 100 at Shannon, sit back or stand by Shannon and say, Tamra, that's too much. And so that's the kind of game she's having to navigate, is I think she thought, oh, it's all of us versus Shannon, when it's really Tamra versus Shannon with everybody watching.
Absolutely. And I think Tamra, the issue for Tamra is that she's arguing she's in the middle. She's arguing that she's being put in the middle and wants to stay in Switzerland, but she's not behaving as you would expect Switzerland would. And also, if she knows that there are videos coming and she's not telling Shannon, I don't know that I really believe. And she didn't do a great confessional to convince me that she's doing that because she wants to stay out of it. I think she's doing it because she knows she wants to see what happens next, which is not for that to happen and be discussed on the same episode when we're allegedly seeing the Tres Amigas reuniting. That would be, you would think, the first part of a reunification process.
You would think, but it's that whole extra component of we're filming a TV show, and as much as I love and support this person, these coming out feed our story and would be great for the show. And that's the dark path you can walk down if you think too hard about how these shows come together and how these women have to navigate it all. But I think it says a lot about Tamra standing within the group that, like Heather especially, is still very much her, like they're number one and number two together in terms of friendship. And I think those two have come back and proven that they're very important special ingredients to making this show. And so I think that's a little bit of, I don't know if there's ever job security in Housewives, but like a little bit of something. It's, would you really take out the two women who came back and essentially, for lack of a better term, slash the words that have been given to them, saved the show from its COVID demise?
To be continued.
To be continued. We'll see what happens. But I Shannon has secured her orange for at least another season, I think.
Poor sweet Shannon. Shannon's like, can I have some job insecurity? Can I have things that are going well so you don't know what there is to discuss? And the world says, no, Shannon, you can't. No, you can't.
I loved her reaction to me asking, because you know of the online joke of Shannon has been on this show for 10 years now and she's never had a good season. And she was like, season 14 wasn't bad, which is the season that Kelly Dodd hit her in the head at that weird retreat in Arizona.
Poor Shan. I love her so much.
That's the high for Shannon. Know that that's where we're working off of.
God bless her. God bless her at that. Listen, Bryce Sander, I could talk to you all day. This has been such a delay. I need you to come back ASAP. Like, I genuinely need you to come back ASAP because there are so many other avenues that I would love to go down with you. In the meantime, can you tell the AGs where they can follow you on social, watch those long form videos on YouTube, mention it all?
Yeah. So I'm just at Bryce Sander everywhere. And you can go to Entertainment Tonight's YouTube channel to watch the interviews, but they're also, not everything gets posted to YouTube, so everything is also always available at ET Online, and I link every single interview in my Instagram bio, so you can just find the face you're looking to watch and click on it, and you'll be able to see Shannon, Tamara, Alexis, Heather, Katie. Those are all the OC ladies I've talked to so far, so we'll get Emily, Gina, and Jen before season's end, hopefully.
Oh my God, those will be so good. I like literally can't wait to watch. Listen, guys, follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Send me your satchels of gold, your long form thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about all things Orange County and more. There is going to be a satchel spectacular up on the AG Patreon this weekend. So last call, send me your satchels of gold. Please include your first name and town, and you can DM them to me on Instagram at Dame Galley or email me a thesis spectacular at andysgirlsshow@gmail.com. That Patreon exclusive episode will be exclusive to the OG of the AG and people's couch tiers. So you can join or level up at patreon.com/andysgirls. And I'm really, really excited to unpack your thoughts. So please send them to me. I'm very, very excited for that episode. And Bryce Sander, thanks so much for coming back. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. Thanks to you for listening. And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.